From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. It's our year in review, 2013. I'm here with Ann Powers, Stephen Thompson, Robin Hilton, and this begins NPR Music's year-end coverage. Over the course of the next few weeks, we'll be posting lists of our favorite music of the year. There'll be a top 50 albums list, a top 100 songs list, all coming soon. Also, I'll post my personal list of favorite albums and songs, so will Stephen, Ann, and Robin. We're also asking you to vote for your favorite music of the year. We'll have a poll up online. It's all meant to start a conversation about the music you love and hopefully learn about the music you might have missed. On this show, we'll talk about the year in music. How will you remember 2013? The year started off with a few surprises. The one you're hearing now was a record that's 22 years coming. The music of My Bloody Valentine, a favorite of my co-host Robin Hilton's.
One of the overriding themes of 2013 by far was a return after long breaks. So many bands came back after long breaks. There was Sebado, Luscious Jackson, Mazzy Star, Daft Punk, Boards of Canada, even Black Sabbath put a record in.
Dismemberment Plan.
Yeah, 12 years between that record, like 22 between the record that's playing behind us.
Suede.
And I think out of all of those, I think the My Bloody Valentine leads the pack, not to mention that it came out right at the top of the year.
That's how we started our year. Let's listen to a little bit in the clear and talk a little about My Bloody Valentine.
So this record, you know, I think at some point, Stephen, earlier in the year, you mentioned how all these bands coming back after long breaks, it felt like we were seeing the dying embers of our youth. But to me, it's quite the opposite. It's all these bands came back, I think, for the most part, pulled it off this year.
Yeah, it's not a matter that these records are bad. I think the words I used was squinting at the dying embers of our generation's cultural relevance, that these bands kind of had to hurry it up if they were ever going to make music again.
I feel like I was squinting at the thick facial hair of my generation, especially the summer when I went to the Sub Pop 25 and saw Built to Spill play, another band that reunited this year. I love the maturity of these bands now. I think this My Bloody Valentine record was a complete natural evolution. It was a perfect record from them at this time.
But did it actually make a mark on anyone who didn't know the first record at all? I'm not sure it did. I think it fell on the ears, and pleasurably so, on the ears of those who wanted that record. It completely didn't touch anyone, and I think our intern Alex, we keep one person here.
My 20-something is always in the room.
He represents the world.
We have a little pen in the studio where we keep a young person.
And he was naughty.
A little cattle prod.
Missed a generation.
No, I think one of the things that this speaks to with the My Bloody Valentine record is another thing, point that we made in the mid-year show that Stephen made, is this record, they just sort of released it completely without any fanfare at all. This record just suddenly appeared, and it was after 20 years of Kevin Shields, who fronts the band, saying we're going to put out another record, it's coming. And then when it finally came, it just sort of appeared on the internet, and then there was no hype around it, and then it was gone and then it
almost vanished. And there was another artist that did the same thing, David Bowie, another album that made no impact on anyone who didn't know David Bowie before, right? But it was a good record.
I don't know if I agree with that. I think
Alex?
Yeah, that's the kid.
He agrees. Yeah,
he's saying David Bowie.
Go on.
All I can say is, to me, both My Bloody Valentine and especially David Bowie are doing their careers, quote unquote, exactly as they should. These are artists who have given us such a legacy, and they're continuing and growing with this new work. With the Bowie, you're right, Bob. One evening, we're all just sitting home on our computers, as we all are, 24 hours a day, and it shows up. Yeah. This means so much after a decade. David Bowie, new music, no fanfare. And the song itself, I think, was a perfect sort of expression of the way it came to us. It's reflective, quiet, very wise, just as David Bowie is.
Let's hear it.
What's the song you're talking about?
It's called Where Are We Now?
Had to get the train from Potsdamer Platz. You never knew that I could do that. Just walking the day. Sitting in the jungle under the stars, a man lost in time near Cardiff, just walking the dead.
It's a good question to ask, Mr. David.
Where is he now? He's working. He's with us. I love that.
Well, I think I'm totally with you, and it was the way I felt about this record, the way I felt about the My Bloody Valentine record and other returns from bands like Sebado. I kept thinking, wait, this is a big deal, everybody. Let's stop for a second. This is huge. And it just, you just kept going and going and going and going.
I think what's really nice about all those records is that they felt like they were made because they needed to be made. The people who made them felt compelled to make them not out of any sort of pressure to churn out product, but because these were the songs. Or debt. And I mean, one hopes, but that they felt like they had a reason to exist.
Like, I feel that way about the Backstreet Boys tour, and I'm sure that you do too.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I was a little more of an NSYNC man.
No way, Brian forever.
So looking at the calendar, and as things were coming out, and just looking back at it, it was the other remarkable thing was there was one other artist for me, a veteran artist, and we're certainly going to go through the year, and we're going to talk about lots of new stuff, but it just happened that way at the beginning of the year. It was right around February. It was right around the time we were thinking about our Valentine's Day show. I wonder, who should we do? We've had John Waters, which was a really very funny Valentine's Day show, and Tom Jones. Who's sexy, you know? Who can we talk to about Valentine's Day and talk about romance?
I think I was on vacation that week.
That's right. And and out comes this record by Brian Ferry of Roxy Music. But it wasn't a Brian Ferry solo album as such. It wasn't him singing at all. It was him reimagining Roxy Music song, the band he was in the 70s, right along paralleling David Bowie and all those people, reimagining his own music as played by a hot 1920s jazz band. And it still, all year long, was my soundtrack. I never stopped loving this record. I'd like to play a cut off of the Jazz Age, something people might have heard in the Great Gatsby movie. Let's play a cut. Why don't we play Love is a Drug, which is just the amazing song off of the Siren album by Roxy Music.
Definitely one of the sexiest songs ever written.
Yes.
Thank you. Ouch. Ouch.
I was just sitting here marveling at how, as this show has progressed, it's just getting older and older.
So, like just like us.
I'm picking the song next, and I'm like, I've got something by a hot young megaphone crooner.
And there ain't nothing wrong with the megaphone, Stephen Thompson.
I'm not besmirching the good name of the megaphone crooner.
Well, that's Brian Ferry. The Jazz Age is the record. A record that was my palate cleanser all year long. Truly, truly remarkable album. We're going through the year. We're only in like February. We're going to march through and hear some of our personal favorites and some things that really marked the year for us. But I hear that record, Stephen. I think of Sexy, mm-hmm. Stephen.
Does it still sound sexy as a 20s jazz band when you hear those songs?
It's still much sexy. More so.
Yeah.
Actually,
were,
more so.
They were pretty sexy in the 20s.
20s was the sexiest decade of the 20th century.
That movie is sultry, right?
Yeah.
That's
and,
what's beautiful
totally.
About that
And
music.
The 20s can be a metaphor for that because they ended with depression and collapse, the way so many sexy
Just
things
like
do.
Just like so many of your romantic relationships.
Wow. I just got burned.
Yeah. Speaking of sexy...
Speaking of sexy, you'd like me to talk now? one of my picks, one of my favorite records of the year, a record that carried me through the whole year, is called Woman.
Don't look at me like that when you say that.
By the band Rye. You know, it's interesting. I when I've looked at my favorite records of the year... Bob's taking his shirt, not his shirt off, his overshirt off. So many of my favorite records of the year, I felt like this was an unusually, tremendously great year for women in music. And I was looking over my list of my favorite albums and just rattling them off. And the first one I named that wasn't by a woman was called Woman by a band called Rye, where the singer kind of sings like a woman. It's such a sexy record. Mike Milosh and Robin Hannibal, not only are they love songs and sex songs, but they're affection songs. They're about a loving relationship, and sex obviously fits into that, but I love it. The first song on that record is called Open. It's one of my favorite songs of the year.
I'm a fool for that shake in your thumbs. I'm a fool for that sound in your slums. I'm a fool for your belly. I'm a fool for your love. I wanna make this play. Gentle sting between us. I wanna make this play. Oh, I know you're faded. But stay, don't close your hands. I wanna make this play. Oh, I know you're faded. But stay.
Going to Austin, South by Southwest, and actually knew the record but didn't pay any attention to whether it was a guy or girl. I just assumed it was a woman. And getting and setting up and the show and seeing Mike sing, and it just blew me away the whole night. I was just, I kept like shaking my head. And
I think you're missing the biggest takeaway from this, though. That it was such a strong year for men named Robin. We had Robin Thicke, and then we had Robin Hannibal.
True. Huh. Yeah.
Of course, Robin Hilton.
Two out of three ain't bad.
And yet, I'm yet to meet another man named Robin. That's all right. If you're out there.
Wow.
Do you go to the Sherwood Forest?
Because I got that a lot growing up.
Sorry.
It's a great record. That's a Rye record. Great, wonderful.
I just wanted to say that one of my favorite records was by a band called Quadrin, which Robin Hannibal is also in with the singer Coco O. And they were also had a great song on the Great Gatsby soundtrack. How many times can I say great in one sentence?
It is all coming full circle. Already. We're only in February.
It's true.
You mentioned what a strong year it was for women musicians, for women artists, and talking with both you and Anne this past year and looking back at everything, of course, women in country, it was an incredible year for women in country. The Kacey Musgraves is what I'm thinking of from that first part of the year.
Right, that came out in March, right?
Yeah, my favorite album of the year. In all likelihood. I reserve the right to change my top 10 list. But
where did you hear about Kacey Musgraves?
I actually first heard about Rye from you, too. But yes, Ann Powers is the first person to tell me that I needed to hear Kacey Musgraves. And like a blind chicken finding a kernel of corn every now and then, Ann was right on the money.
If you peck your beak around long enough, you'll hiss.
Eventually,
you've
got to find something. The album's called Same Trailer, Different Park. And no record this year, just in addition to how many people this record affected, how many people love this record, we've been talking internally, what are our favorite albums of the year? What are our favorite songs of the year? And one of the signs of a really great album is when you have a room full of music people and they're talking about their favorite songs and there are like five different songs from a record up for consideration. This record had that. I was just really touched and moved by a bunch of different songs on this record in a bunch of different ways.
There's politics, there's sex on this record, mm-hmm. there's novelty songs, there's heartbreak, there's
a winsome look at small town life.
It's all there.
I'm going to go with Follow Your Arrow in part because it's a little peppier, and it's always good to get a little pep on a show like this. Yeah, there are so many anthems, like pop anthems this year that were about, that were kind of reflecting, the debate over marriage equality.
Yeah.
And even the fact that that has also bled into country is really intriguing.
Well, this song was co-written with Kacey by Shane McAnally and Brandi Clark, both of whom are actually out gay people and songwriters. And speaking of the great Brandi Clark, she made possibly my favorite record of the year. It came out at the end of the year, so bookending this amazing year for women in country and Americana music. I just think of her. She's in her mid-30s. She's actually from Washington State, which must be why she's great.
Right.
Just like
me. I'm guessing that's what it is.
And she has a voice that feels like your sister telling you a story at the kitchen table. And her stories are like that. They're so intimate. They're full of homely details. And they really tell the regular lives of regular people in that great country way. And I would love to hear a song by Brandy. I chose the song Just Like Him, which is all about marrying the wrong guy who happens to be just like your dad, from her album 12 Stories.
He was kind of like Superman. Sure, save the day, disappear, and then we wouldn't hear from him till Christmas. And he was always a whole lot of fun till he'd get one drink too drunk. The fight would start, he'd be breaking hearts and dishes. Used to say that I'd be damned for ever fall in love with a man like the one Mama wasted her youth on. When I wait up all night long, I feel like I'm 6 years old. Just like him. Daddy had the bluest eyes. He kept my mama hypnotized. Now I finally read.
So that's Brandy Clark. I hope that everyone embraces her and makes her a huge star. I think she's one of the amazing new talents to come out of 2013.
And so many to choose from, and just in that field.
It's true. It's such a
You're
rich...
You're saying Holly...
Holly Williams, Ashley Monroe...
Caitlin Rose. Nora Jane Struthers. Good.
Let's just listen to women country singers for the rest of the episode. Bob, are you cool with
that? And now for
Welcome
something completely
to
different.
The podcast, The Hay Bale, with Ann and Steven.
Starring Kanye West. Which we move into the next chunk of time here. If we
That's
start to go into
smooth,
spring.
Smooth segue, man. That was like jazz.
Well, if Brandy Clark was the record I've listened to the most, especially in recent months, I'd like now to feature the record I've listened to the least this year, but I think is such an important record and such a confrontational, inspirational record, and that is Kanye West's Yeezus. Not an easy record to listen to in any way. I have problems with this record, the way women are represented on it, but the sound of it and the content, how he is really trying to be political, mythical, and, of course, his narcissistic self at the same time, I think I will be coming back to this record for the rest of my life. And one of the most powerful songs is Blood on the Leaves, and we're going to hear that now.
Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees.
I just need to clear my mind now. It's been racing since the summertime.
Please.
Now I'm holding down the summer now.
Please.
And all I want is what I can't buy now. Cause I ain't got the money on me right now. And I told you to wait.
Please.
Yeah, I told you to wait.
Please.
So I'ma need a little more time now. Cause I ain't got the money on me right now. And I thought you could wait.
Please.
Yeah, I thought you could wait.
Please.
These bitches surrounding me.
Black bodies.
Oh, want something now, man. Then they talk about me.
Please.
Would be lost without me. We could have been
Strange.
Somebody.
Hey.
Thought you'd be different about it. Now
trees.
I know you're not it.
From the pop of
so
trees.
Let's get on with it. We could have been somebody. Said you had to tell somebody. Let's take it back to the first party. When you tried your first smile, it came out of your body. It came out of your body. Running naked down the lobby. And you were screaming that you love me. Before the limelight tore ya. Before the limelight stole ya. Remember we were so young.
found when I heard this record, especially this particular song, I was so infuriated. To take Billie Holiday's song that so was important to civil rights, so important to picture painting of what went on in the South towards black people.
And a performance by Nina Simone.
And turn it into, right, and the Nina Simone version, and to turn it into a song about a relationship. And
I felt the same way, I have to say, but...
Where's the butt for you? Is there ever an artist that pisses you off so much that you can't listen to them? Like, you know, Woody Allen, in movies, yeah. Right, would be, I'm never watching another Woody Allen movie.
As a matter of fact, that is how I feel about Woody Allen.
But I always find that people cut him slack, I guess, because there's so much talent there, right? Is that the reason, or what is it for you?
Well, honestly, I feel like this year there's been so much intense conversation around race and oppression and the history of this country, and especially with 12 Years a Slave coming out more near the end of the year. Again, a very, very confrontational, intense, hard-to-watch movie, that it made me come back to this record, and I totally agree. Kanye West is often offensive, self-absorbed, really problematic, but he is working to try to get to the deepest issues of our culture in music. And for me, even when he fails, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I don't know. Is anybody else?
But you disagree. You disagree with me, don't you, Stephen?
Well, I disagree about this particular song. I find this song, I just saw 12 Years a Slave and was newly enraged at any number of things, but including that particular song. But there are a bunch of songs on that record, On Sight, Black Skinhead, that are just so amazing sounding. But I have that, you know, it's funny you mention Woody Allen. There's this great line on The Simpsons where Ned Flanders is talking about Woody Allen's movies, and he says, yeah, I like his movies, except for that nervous fella who's always in them. And I feel that way about Kanye West's records, where it's like, I love his records, except for that megamaniacal jackass who's always in them.
But that megamaniacal jackass is us in some way, or is America, let's say.
Well, he's a really talented dude.
Yeah, you know, for as amazing as that record sounds, and there are other hip-hop records out from big name veterans, you know, like Jay-Z. I really think I felt like this year, and also in recent years, that it's the most interesting hip hop stuff has been coming from a new generation of young hip hop artists and rappers. You have Chance this year. You have someone like Chance the Rapper, who is just incredible. Saw him at South by Southwest. J. Cole,
Danny Brown made a great record this year.
And I think particularly when you have like the Odd Future Collective or even Death Grips that just dropped their record here towards the end of the year, I'm hearing just some of the most interesting sounds. Mm-hmm. It's experimental hip hop and just some of the most compelling stuff I've heard.
This is more of a veteran, but that Pusha T record is pretty incredible.
Yeah.
I'd like to play something from the Earl Sweatshirt record. It came out in the summer, late summer. The record was called Doris, and I want to play a cut called Chum.
Something sinister to it. Pendulum swinging slow, a degenerate moving through the city with criminal stealth. Welcome to enemy turf, harder than immigrants work. Golf is distant in my shirt. Get up off the pavement, brush the dirt up off my psyche. Psyche, psyche. It's probably been 12 years since my father left. Left me fatherless. And I just used to say I hate him in dishonest jest. When honestly I miss this nigga like when I was 6. And every time I got the chance to say it, I would swallow it. 16, I'm hollowing tolerance. Skip shots of storm, that whole bottle. I show you a role model. Drunk pissy pissing on somebody front lawn, trying to figure out how and when the fuck I miss moderate. Mama often was offering peace, offering stink. Weeds cough, scoffing, and he's off again. Searching for a big brother, Tyler was that. And plus he like how I rap. The blunt and mice, the trap. Too black for the white kids and too white for the blacks. From on the road to cracking locks up off them bicycle racks. I'm indecisive, I'm scatterbrained, and I'm frightened. It's 7 and in them eyes where he hiding all the bicycles at. Something sinister to it. The pendulum swinging slow, a degenerate moving through the city with criminal stealth. Welcome to enemy turf, harder than immigrants work. Golf is distant in my shirt. Get up off the pavement, brush the dirt up off my psyche. Psyche, psyche.
And Earl Sweatshirt, I think he's, 19 years old? You take someone like Chance the Rapper, I think he just turned 20 this year. There's some amazing talent.
Kendrick Lamar, of course, whose verse on the song Control blew everybody's mind, and whose largely thought of as the heir apparent to people like Jay-Z and Kanye.
Yeah,
yeah.
There was an awful lot of R&B, but one of the R&B records we're now looking at the year in review. We're in 2013, and we're in the spring. And one of the records that came out right around in sometime early spring was a very R&B infused electronica record, the James Blake record, which James Blake does this wonderful thing where he straddles this line of like amazing sonic textures, but he counters it with this incredibly soulful voice. I did a quick interview with him talking about the music that inspires his life, and one of the artists and songs he talked about was Sam Cooke and Sam Cooke's blues record. And Trouble Blues was a song. And he sang the beginning line of Trouble Blues for me. And then he sang the opening line for Retrograde. And I think it just
it's almost the same song.
Yeah.
It was really amazing to hear.
And those two elements work so well. That bizarre bottomy end, clicky drums and so forth. And that rising synth line. And then you get this soulful, soulful young voice. So can we play... One of my favorite songs, Robin, your favorite song for sure.
Probably be my song of the year.
Let's play Retrograde by James Blake. Made babies to this song.
I don't get that. What I do get is that I could easily teach an entire college course for a semester on just this song and the video that went along with it. And yeah, I know that it's a sexy video in some ways, if not a little strange. But this song, to me, James Blake is sort of the, what would you say, the missing link or the Rosetta Stone that connects all these different genres together. Because there's a little bit of hip-hop, a little bit of soul, a little bit of R&B, a little bit of electronica.
A little bit of future.
I also think
of future, too.
Yes. He really is.
Future of the rapper.
Yeah.
Or
just the future.
Oh, the future.
just in terms of sound. Just in terms of like how he uses sound to create atmosphere and mood. It's very different than anyone else. No one makes...
And I have to make one quick point about this song, and as I've continued to discover new things in it. But you know, Retrograde in astronomy is when two objects are spinning and orbiting in opposite directions. And he does something really cool with this song, which is that tone that falls down on the chorus. It's falling down as his voice soars up. So there's that crisscrossing, and there's a lot of There are so many different things like that going on, and the little secrets to discover in that song.
I think the idea of the future, one thing about younger artists like James Blake is they're beyond genre. They're trying to go beyond genre. I think it's a perfect example of that. And Bob, I know a band that you and I both loved, and the record that we both loved this year is another band that defies and goes beyond genre.
I never, ever would think that the Vampire Weekend, who I like just fine. In fact, I really like the first record quite a bit. I never thought they had it in them to make a record as solid and amazing as the Modern Vampires of the City. Every song had its own voice. Every song lyrically was spectacular and deep. Mm-hmm. Lots of songs about belief and love. Lots of people write about songs about love, but this was different. This was more life infused.
Absolutely. Unbelievers is a song I love, and that's become kind of our family anthem as secular Jews. When we're driving around in Alabama, we all three of us, me, my husband,
secular
and my daughter,
Jews in Alabama,
are singing it. Thank you, Ezra Koenig.
Is there a reality show about secular Jews?
No, there's a band, though, from Alabama.
There's a song, and it's called Unbelievers.
Can we play there's a bit of hip-hop in a song called Step on the Vampire Weekend record. I would have played Obvious Bicycle, which is a lead-off cut, which is a song I've played more than any other song all year, but I think Step fits in.
That's
right
here.
That's
a great song. Step is awesome.
Let's do that.
Every time I see you in the world, you always step to my girl. We're back, I used to front like Andrew White, Mechanicsburg, Anchorage, and Dar es Salaam. We'll own New York with champagne and disco, tapes from LA / San Francisco. But actually, Oakland and Alameda, your girl was in Berkeley with a communist reader. Mine was in tune with a boombox and Walkman. I was a horrible girl that was back then. Love's the love, the wisdom teeth I love, what you on about? I feel it in my bones, I feel it in my bones. I'm stronger now, I'm ready for the house. Such a modest mouth, I can't do it alone, I can't do it alone. Every time I see you in the world, you always step.
Beyond the harpsichord, you know, there's not much that you think about that sounds like the first Vampire Weekend record. They made this record more composed, whereas all their other records in the past, they were a band that played songs, that recorded the songs. These records, they had never played live in any way, shape, or form. They were all sort of composed in different various little home studios.
And still really a record, though, about living in the city, don't you think? And the sounds of the city have so many different sounds mixed. That's one thing I love about this band. They're so sophisticated and so urbane.
And they took a nice sample from Souls of Mischief, is that right, the song? And
there's so many little beautiful sounds that surface throughout that. There's this little rising, it's a beautiful song. I'm still kind of discovering that song.
If we stick to the spring, one of the records that came out in spring that sort of told a story that was to come, i.e. about folk music. Mm-hmm. Because folk music is a big talk of later in the year when
Inside Llewyn Davis
from the Coen Brothers movie that tells the story of a folk singer in Greenwich Village
based on the early
1960s, sort of based on the life of
Dave Van Ronk,
based loosely on the life of Dave Van Ronk.
Basically, a folk singer that didn't rise to the top, right.
It's the kind of circular wanderings of a luckless anti-hero. and it's a lovely soundtrack. But folk music has swirled around in the soup of popular music for several years now, where you've got, you know, Mumford and Sons winning the Album of the Year Grammy and everything. But it's been nice to see a little bit sort of steps further back in the history of folk music. The Inside Llewyn Davis soundtrack certainly qualifies, but earlier in the year, you had this wonderful, really, there's no other word than brilliant, record by Laura Marling called Once I Was an Eagle, which plays as a, it kind of, there's a suite of songs in the beginning of it, but really the whole thing functions as like a 55-minute piece where the songs are woven together in very clever ways. The fact that she is, you know, she's kind of a veteran at this point. She is 23 years old.
It's crazy.
Is just unbelievable to me. It's a great record.
And very gifted performer and charismatic performer live. Unbelievable. Even more so for me than the record. So the record's really good.
I think she's also tapping into, well, specifically the British folk tradition and sort of progressive folk and Fairport Convention. And, you know, we talked about how Linda Thompson, who was from that era, released a great record this year as well. So we have that. But I love the scope of her vision and the fact it's very mythologically rich as well.
I just can't imagine what kind of music she's going to be making in 20 years because she's so fully formed at 23. Let's hear Master Hunter, which is such a great song.
Hunter, I cured my skin. Now nothing gets in, nothing that is hard as a child. You want a woman cause you wanna be safe. Well, I tell you that I got a little all out on my brain. You want a woman who will call your name. It ain't me, babe. No, 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 it ain't me, babe. Stare at water anymore. Water doesn't do what it did before. It took me in and to the edge of insane when I only meant to swim. I nearly put a bullet in my brain when the rhythm took me in. I am a master hunter. You let men to your bed. Do they not know you well? They can't get into my head. They don't have a hope in hell. You see, the thing is, we are so alone. There's nothing we can share. You can get me on a telephone, but you won't keep me there.
Yeah, you know that her voice reminds me of someone else who a record came out a few months later. The purity of it. There's a record by Valerie June, right? This was Laura Marling.
Yeah.
But Anna Powers, I know you love Valerie June.
This is the one voice. Robin had asked us earlier today if one song or one voice came into your head to define 2013. It's definitely Valerie June's for me. She's from the Memphis area, outside of Memphis, Tennessee, lives in Brooklyn now, and just has such a distinctive take on mixing folk, Americana, blues, kind of a garage rock. Dan Auerbach of the Black Keys produced her record that came out this year. I can't stop hearing her in my head. And so let's just hear her right now in the song Somebody to Love.
Well, if you're tired and feeling so lonely, you wake up at night thinking that only if you had somebody, will I be somebody? You're somebody to love. Did the day there were plenty in the sea, but you're out in the cold and you're feeling empty, looking for somebody. Will I be somebody? Somebody to love.
That I mean, that's a simple little song. There's much more rockin' stuff on her album Pushing Against the Stone, but you know, we were talking over the break, there are some artists who are just so distinctive, so themselves, just utterly themselves, and that's how I feel about Valerie June. Yes, she sounds like old blues women like Elizabeth Cotton. Yes, she has connections to someone like Erykah Badu, but she is herself, and I always get hooked by that.
Yeah, and she, when she played the Tiny Desk, she's completely comfortable in her skin in this way of making music that is so totally out of time, and she's right there. That is her, and there's nothing hokey, or there's nothing right. There's nothing false about it.
Nothing
it
is staged, just, right. Nothing, she's not, you know, wearing a vest, singing a song inspired by
worst.
Shakespeare.
Vest wearer. No, I mean, she's a genuine oddball in the best way.
Right, right. And another genuine oddball is Ty Siegel.
Well, in the best possible way.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, we've been working through the year. We're in summer now. We're looking at some of the summer releases, and Ty Siegel put a solo record out towards the end of the summer, late summer, called Sleeper. I could have started the year with Ty Siegel because January, very early January, he announced that he'd formed yet another band. His ninth.
This time as a drummer.
Yeah, and he's playing drums in a band called Fuzz, and Fuzz put out a great record this fall. There has been such a wonderful revival of garage and guitar rock. Just sloppy, fast, loud, gritty rock. In many ways, Ty Siegel has been driving that revival. He's been, just on a simplistic mathematical level, he's been in so many bands in just the last few years that put out great records. And curiously, the solo record he put out this year, however, was not a garage rock or a guitar rock album. It's called Sleeper. It was mostly acoustic, mostly quiet songs, but it was a deeply personal record, one that he wrote after his father died. He was estranged from his mother. He moved from his longtime home of San Francisco. He moved to Los Angeles to be with his sister. And he kind of works through all of that on this record. And I want to play a cut from Sleeper called The Man Man. Song, I mentioned that this is a mostly quiet record, and it is, but this is the one song on the, I'll just scooch ahead here, it's the one song where he gives you a taste of how he normally sounds.
It sounds so much like the Jefferson Airplane right here.
Yeah. It it's a lot of, he really channels that whole period of music that you're talking about brilliantly. There's a little bit of Syd Barrett on this. There's a little bit of T-Rex on this. But Ty Segall has—he's become such an important part and such an important figure in the music that I loved.
He's made three records since we started recording this show.
and he's another one. He's super young, you know.
Yeah, and very gifted.
And speaking of super young,
and gifted,
going from the garage to the top of the charts, I guess. But an artist who also has a kind of a minimalist sound, which we all heard in a place we wouldn't expect that, which is on your car radio or wherever you hear the top 40. And that is Lorde, the teenaged New Zealander, daughter of a poet, bringing to my ears a fresh new wave of kind of bohemianism and oppositional culture. I jokingly have said that Lorde is the new Nirvana.
Oh, God.
And that's the response I always get when I say it.
How do you mean that? I don't know.
What I mean is that, to me, Lorde represents kind of the coming to fruition of a whole spirit that you see on the internet of feminist bloggers, young women like Tavi Gevinson of Rookie Magazine, young women on YouTube who are making their own music, girls I know who came out of Rock Camp for Girls. Right. This has been something that's been building for, I don't know, maybe a decade,
perhaps. Isn't that parallel and always true since, you know, 1980?
It is a different kind. Kind of wave. It's a little bit more. I mean, Tavi Gevinson is an entrepreneur,
right? Exactly.
Like, not just an oppositional voice, but a budding icon.
That's it. And just as Nirvana, to me, was the spirit of an underground made so beautiful and accessible and powerful that it broke through to the mainstream. And I'm not saying Lorde's making music of the quality or level of Smells Like Teen Spirit necessarily, but she has something of that quality of a breakthrough. And Royals was a controversial song. That was her big hit single. It's not my favorite song of hers. I would like to play a song from her album Pure Heroine that I like better. It's called Tennis Court.
Don't you think that it's boring how people talk? Making smart with the words again. Well, I'm bored. Because I'm doing this for the thrill of it, killing it, never not chasing a million things I want. I am only as young as the minute is, full of it, getting pumped up on the little bright things I bought. But I know they'll never own me. Baby, be the class clown. I'll be the beauty queen in tears. It's a new art form showing people how little we care. We're so happy, even when we're smiling out of fear. Let's go down to the tennis court and talk it up like, yeah. Pretty soon I'll be getting on my first plane. I'll see the veins of my city like they do in space.
This reminds me of a little bit of a record that I'm obsessed with. It's not a new artist, but an artist we haven't heard from in 7-8 years, which is The Blow. Can you hear that?
I definitely can hear that.
It's spare electronics. It's very intimate kind of vocal style. I'm going to play some Blow a little later. And
The Blow is a little less drowsy than this in the delivery. The Blow is a little spikier to me.
At times.
Yeah.
This is Lorde. She's from New Zealand, and this is a lead-off track from the record.
The whole record is good, too. I mean, I always feel like when a new artist hits the top 40, people will make judgments based on one song, and I hope everybody's listening to the album. And she's got, like Laura Marling, she has a long career ahead of her. I'm curious what she'll be doing in 5, 10, 20 years.
I would imagine.
Another artist that reminded me of was a group called Daughter.
Oh yeah, I love this record.
You want to hug this one together?
Well, it's like two of my favorite things are gloom and hostility. And the daughter made a very, it's a very moody and beautiful record called If You Leave this year. Had them at the Tiny Desk. And it should be pointed out who played daughter on this show in a South by Southwest preview in 2011 when no one knew who they were.
I don't think he's talking about you, Hilton.
No.
I'm still trying to figure out who you're talking about.
Because we listened to the, 1,500 songs or whatever. And I picked the saddest dirge.
Surprise!
that I could find called Landfill. Which is from an EP. They finally put out their first full-length record this year called If You Leave. My favorite song on that record, which they played at the Tiny Desk recently, is called Youth.
I'm so glad. Let's do that.
Shadows settle on the place that you left. Our minds are troubled by the emptiness. Destroy the middle, it's a waste of time. From the perfect start to the finish line. And if you're still breathing, you're the lucky ones. 'Cause most of us are heaving through corrupted lungs. Setting fire to our insides for fun. Collecting names of the lovers that went wrong. The lovers that went wrong. Most of our feelings, they are dead and they are gone.
If you're still bleeding, you're one of the lucky ones.
This is the cheeriest song on the record.
I'm a happy person. It's interesting. We played Laura Marling's Master Hunter, and we played this, and what they have in common is they're these down, singer songwriters, but with these amazing drums. Mm. That give these songs a real lift and a real kick that make them more than just here as a singer-songwriter.
I think there's like a Hunger Games vibe about all this music somehow. These girl heroes out there in dark times.
I'm glad to be raising a daughter in that world.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
So we're in the summer. We're talking about new albums that came out by new groups. In fact, San Fermin is the one I want to play next. Yeah. We just played music by Daughter. Before that, Lord. San Fermin is a group based in Brooklyn. It was a sort of a project by a fellow named Ellis Ludwig Leon, and he composed all the music with his buddy Alan Tate in mind. Alan Tate is, he has this very deep, nice baritone.
It's kind of Matt Berninger, Bill Callahan kind of deep
right,
voice.
Something along those lines for sure. In fact, the National do come to mind when you listen to the music. Mm. He didn't have a band when he put this together. He got the two women, Holly Lessig and Jess Wolfe from Lucius together to make the record. And I've just instantly fell in love with them. I've seen the band now three or four times, and they keep
talk
growing.
Talk about the lucky ones.
I have to thank you for this record, for recommending this record, Bob, because I was driving to Nashville in September, and this was one of the few records I took, and it's the perfect record for a long drive because it really draws you in the way a great novel is, but reading a novel while driving is really not the
right.
best thing.
It's frowned upon.
Yes.
Yeah, I found a lot of records, and The Vampire Weekend was one, where these are composed records as opposed to live inspiration like Ty Siegel kind of a record. So let's play something from San Fermin. You love this record. Do you want to pick a song?
Oh, my God. This is one of my favorite records of the year. And boy, talk about another young... Ellis Ludwig Leon is like 24. Let's play the first cut from the record. Yeah. It's called Renaissance with an exclamation point.
A renaissance. A another day to tiptoe on the balustrade. Get over you like anything I ever could. It's easier from far away. Imagine this another way. I know the light to every place. The best ones cry. So please come wake me up. There's a mob at the door, I hear them calling for my head, and the scaling walls, I'm still dreaming magnificent things. It's awful high above the stage. Shadows on the balcony, afraid to die. It's worse than life. The best one to cry.
So many new artists. This is Sent For Mean. You know, Laura Mvulu is an artist we didn't play at all yet on this show. So many good
I love Laura Mvulu is a good comparison because of the constructed nature of that record, too. That's very right. Composed.
It's a great debut.
Listening to this record, thinking about how young this composer is, how young this band is, and also thinking about how much the wide variety of music that there is, everything from take the Brian Ferry Orchestra as a really far side of it, and the Kanye West on the other. This culture, this people who are just growing up, who are 18, 25 years old, who now have access to every single piece of music possible for free. I think it really deeply affects the way people listen. It affects the way the sort of stuff people listen to, because you can easily just dive into and listen to a whole period's worth of music that you didn't know before and learn about it.
We've talked about some of the trends that define 2013. One of them is the fact that downloads are down, that have right. dropped, and streaming music is up. That's how more and more people are hearing the music that they're hearing, and it gives them, because of the deep library, like you say, it allows them to access these archives.
It's easier and easier to dabble.
Easier and easier to be a nerd, right?
And to delve.
And
yeah.
not just dabble, but to dig, to really yeah. just keep digging.
In other words that start with D.
I really feel this is a positive thing. I know that there are ways in which streaming music trouble working musicians, but just in terms of listeners being able to, as you're saying, reach back into history and become immersed and obsessed with whole genres or periods that they never would have known before. And record labels are responding to this. I think that we have amazing reissues labels now, like Light in the Attic and Stone's Throw Records, and another one is Tompkins Square Records. I spent a lot of this year exploring gospel music, and I did a lot of it on the internet, like you're saying, through Spotify, on YouTube, and then I was delighted to discover that Tompkins Square, who's put out a lot of great archival gospel in the past, is just issuing a box set from one of the great gospel labels, Nashboro. This is one of the most important mid-century gospel labels. Opal Lewis Nations, who's a gospel music expert and collector, put this set together, and I wanted to bring in a track from it because it represents for me how living in the past is living in the present and how this music is truly timeless, and I'm so glad that younger ears are hearing it again. I want to play one of the greatest voices ever from the history of American music, Dorothy Love Coates with the Gospel Harmonettes, and this is from the Nashboro I Heard the Angels Singing Electrifying Black Gospel from the Nashboro label on Tompkins Square, which is coming out this month. Let's hear some Dorothy Love Coates and the Gospel Harmonettes.
I should point out that we have this entire box set in our First Listen series right now. If you want to listen, there's like 100 songs or something, and we have all of them online right now as part of the First Listen
series.
It's
an amazing thing. Nashboro Records was a fabulous gospel label.
Yeah, and so much variety in the sound, you know, from this to gospel quartets that was the foundation of doo-wop music, to a duo like the Consolers, who really sound like the Staple Singers or kind of proto-blues sound. It's just wonderful to immerse yourself. One thing I discovered researching gospel was how much is based in it, in secular music, and we all know this. But even today, I hear the spirit of gospel in some of the most important and popular bands, and I would say that one of them made one of the biggest records of the fourth quarter, and that would be the Arcade Fire.
Yeah, Reflector. There's so many themes from this year that you can tie to Arcade Fire's record. I think there's this hype machine, right, that drives a number of these releases. At the top of the show, we talked about artists who just dropped without any fanfare at all their record, and maybe that's one of the reasons why those records were forgotten so quickly as we moved through the year. The Arcade Fire rolled out their record over the course of at least a couple of months, right, really teased it out. For better or for worse, I think for me it hurt the record a little bit because I thought, you know, actually I think it's their best record since Funeral, but I didn't feel like it warranted all the hype around it. I thought this is a really good record.
Can we make a distinction here, and the distinction between hype and promotion. In other words, one is something that a record company puts lots of money in to unfurl a campaign, such as what happened with Daft Punk.
Right.
You know, where you roll it out, you have robot suits in different places, you have different little tidbits. Or Boards of Canada, really kind of cool.
It
wasn't a high expense campaign, but it was
trickled out.
Where there's shortwave radio with clues in it that took you to a site. That I think of as promotion. Hype, I think of as something the media starts to do and builds upon something that maybe there's merit to and maybe there's not. But that's how I distinguish the two.
Maybe, but I think when I think of promotion, I think of something a machine is doing for the band. And I feel like in almost all those cases that you mentioned, the bands were very much behind the creative.
About Arcade Fire? They're totally
No, that's what I'm saying.
You have the machine, but you also have the extent to which there's a gigantic conversation occurring around the band. The band, you know, had won an Album of the Year Grammy, and it felt to me with this record like there was too much buildup, and then an overcorrection where people were far too, like, ridiculously mean when it came out, and now there's kind of a pendulum swinging the other way, where there are so many extreme opinions on this band that it's hard sometimes to just dig down and listen to and appreciate the record.
The more conversation you have about something, the more extremes you're going to start to get, right? The more people talk about it, the more they're going to start to get polarized.
I was going to say, and also in that way, they remind me of a band that they have emulated, which is U2, in that there is this desire to inspire and uplift. And that, to me, is the connection to gospel music, the connection to their embracing disco, the connection to Haitian music, that is Régine Chassaigne's background. They want people to react strongly.
And in this day and age, that's a great way to make people hate your guts.
Totally.
Can I play? I want to play. You know, the Reflector, the title track, was the one that just got played over and over again. But I'd love to play the cut Normal Person.
This monitor's a little bit hot. Thank you guys so much for coming. Sorry about that. Thank you guys so much for coming out. Yeah.
I mean, come on. I think that's genuinely great. And I love the words to this song. It really hits me. I remember thinking at one point in my life, is there anything more terrifying than realizing that you're normal? And he's asking that question. You know, what does it mean to be a normal person?
I remember, Mr. Hilton, last year when we had the end of year show, you said you had a New Year's resolution. You had a few, actually.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was resolved to go see more live shows. How'd you do?
I did see more live shows this year.
Awesome.
That's not saying much.
4 instead of 3.
It's how very old is your child?
He's 2 now.
No wonder.
He's 2. Yeah. And
okay, so resolve to pay more attention to lyrics.
So I did. That's one I did.
That's what made me think about it.
Yeah, there have been a number of our songs this year that I've listened to more carefully.
And resolve to spend more time with records.
Yeah, spend more time with them. You know, spending more time with records, I'm just going to use that real quick as to talk about something Stephen wrote in his most recent column, which is the good listener we have every week. Is it possible to have too much music? And I know we get bombarded with a lot more music than a lot of people listen to, but boy, I just feel that this year, I don't get to spend more time with records because it moves so fast and there's so much coming
out. And this is true across culture. This is true in television, where there are suddenly dozens and dozens and dozens of viable networks instead of 3. I mean, I think it's true. You know, movies, maybe a little less so, but there's an absolute cultural din. I mean, you're drinking out of a fire hose.
Yeah.
And then if you get into the historic stuff, I mean, we were talking about the Nashboro Records has 100 songs. Paramount Records box that Jack White co-released this year has 800 songs on it.
And all of this has really to do, I think, with technology. I mean, the technology, first of all, because it makes distribution cheap. It makes the ability to become an artist and be creative and do something and get it out there possible for anyone in this room or anyone and in any room. I mean, which is pretty much.
And it's wonderful, but I do feel overwhelmed. And so that of all the resolutions, that was the hardest one to keep, spend more time.
But I have a question out of that for you, Bob, which is you still become obsessed with things. And I know there's a band you became obsessed with recently. And I wonder how that experience is. How do you focus in that way with so much coming at you?
I find that I want to talk about The Blow, which is where you're heading here. The Blow are two artists, Kayla Maricich and Melissa Dine. Melissa Dine does the electronics behind Kayla's singing. And what I find over and over again that truly winds up attracting me and drawing me in is some kind of intimacy in the music, some sort of personal connection. In the din, that's what does it. And they have that for sure. And one of the things, the overarching things for this year that I'll just say is that this is also the year that I'm just going to define as the year concerts got too loud. And we did a little survey because I see more and more people wearing earplugs. And so we went out and did a survey on All Songs Considered. Mm-hmm. 70% of our audience says the concerts are too loud. Hear that, people. Hear that, musicians. Hear that, clubs. People think it's too loud. And what happens
is
when it gets too
loud? People mixing the sound have lost enough of their hearing.
Exactly. I swear to God.
If I ever say hello to Jay Maskus from Dinosaur Jr., I'll have to talk to him through a megaphone because his concerts are blisteringly loud, and I think it's because he thinks they're of normal volume.
But in all seriousness, as someone who has suffered some hearing loss after 20 plus years of stuffing napkins in my ears before I got serious earplugs, kids, take care of your ears.
Yeah,
it's important.
If the club's not going to take care of you, get a pair of earplugs.
Yeah.
It's really, really important. The other night I heard an artist, very personal artist, and it was blaring loud. And what happens is you can't get that intimacy. And so what's really, really important is for artists to figure out the proper way to make that happen. And The Blow have done it. When Kayla's up there on stage, she is telling you a story like she's talking across the room from you. And it just sucked me right in. And I was taken. I already liked the record, but I was absolutely floored by it. I just want to play a song. This song's called Make It Up.
They just exchange, and what you see that makes up me will one day take some other shape. And by this method we may come to be something we don't approve of, but right now what we are is just right. We get to make it up.
And I'll just remind everybody that this show is sort of a preamble to what we're going to be doing on our website, which is all of our top 10 lists will come out. We'll also have the NPR Music Top 100 Songs, the NPR Top 50 Albums, which we are in the midst of
fighting
over.
We're going to have a bunch of essays on the record about the year in music.
So all I can say is, you can call us idiots for leaving out your favorite thing, because we did. There's no doubt we did, right?
We left out some of our favorite.
We left out, that's right.
I'm deeply definitely disturbed by the lack of Gregorian chants from this show.
Don't even joke about the Latvian
Choir. The Latvian Radio Choir record's great.
It is a great record. Certainly will make the top 50 albums.
Yeah.
But that is to say, this is a conversation starter and not an ender. This show is meant to be in that spirit. I hope you take it that way. So we started the show talking about artists who were back from long breaks, but there were a lot of artists that came out with records this year that have been around a long time. Veteran artists who have put out lots and lots of music, who are still putting out lots and lots of music long before you'd think they'd be gone.
Whether they're indie artists like Bill Callahan, who evolved
from
his
brilliant record this year, right?
I know, evolved from his smog persona and is making better music than ever. Bonnie Prince Billy, I think he's one of those guys. On the pop front, Robin Thicke, actually, he seemed new to a lot of people, but he's been making Blue Eyed Soul for many, many, many years. And then there are real veterans, like older fellas.
Sir Paul McCartney, we've worked our way through the year and we're in the final quarter of the year, and Paul McCartney put out, I think, a pretty solid record. And I remember I saw him for the first time in concert this past summer, and I left the show thinking, I hope he does just one more great record. And then this one came this fall.
And now he can die.
So we're done now.
But he's not going to die, because he's still completely fit and feisty. And what I love about this record, which is called New, I think that represents his spirit very beautifully, is that McCartney is having as much, if not more, fun than ever playing rock and roll. And the music also is very reflective of his realities. He sings, he's not pretending to be a teenager or even a 35-year-old. He's singing about what it means to be his age, the ARP years, and yet still rocking out. And I think this song, Alligator, perfectly expresses what it's like to be longing for love, romance, and sex at the age of 71. It's called Alligator.
Okay. They got someone setting them free, someone breaking the chains, someone letting them be. I want someone who can save me when I come home from the zoo. I need somebody who's a sweet communicator I can give my alligator to. Seems to know what they're talking about, and I can see why it is. They got someone breaking them out, someone finding a key, someone setting them free. Could you be that person for me? Would you feel right setting me free? Could you dare to
There are a lot of good songs on this record. Really are.
Well produced.
And just, yeah, songs about remembering when he was in the Beatles, songs about what life is like for him now. It's just a complete little vision of Paul McCartney's life.
And the best thing for me, really, when I saw him live, the best thing about it was his storytelling. It's got to be hard to engage on a personal level an arena, or it wasn't even an arena, it was an outdoor stadium filled with 30,000 people or however many people were there. But it was his storytelling and looking back on the years of his life as one of the most remarkable musicians of all time.
Absolutely. And speaking of artists who've been around for a while,
I thought you were going to say, speaking of most remarkable artists of all time. No, if we're looking at, back at the year when and what a strong year 2013 was for veteran artists, musicians who haven't stopped putting out records and put out ones that show that they still have something to say, I have to talk about Flaming Lips again, this record I've just been hammering all year long. I knew when it came out in the spring, that this record, The Terror by The Flaming Lips, I knew it was going to be my album of the year, and here we are at the end. It's still my album of the year. But this is a band, The Flaming Lips. They have been making records for 30 years, nonstop for 30 years, and this most recent record is one of the most exciting creative projects I think they've done in that entire time. And to reach a point in their lives that they have to still have so much creative energy, I think it's just remarkable and inspiring and beautiful. And I have to share a cut from The Terror. Can I do that?
Absolutely.
The opening cut, Look, the Sun is Rising. Some people I know have found this record to be inaccessible or impenetrable. I think maybe one entry point is maybe to listen to the rhythms on this record. It's a very rhythmic record, and the beats. And it's not just rhythms of the percussion. It's rhythms in the guitars, rhythms in the... You're hearing this chunka-chunka-chunka here in the electronics. And I think there are some really interesting rhythms going on in this whole record.
I think Wayne Coyne is just somebody who really is so inspiring to me in that he constantly is pushing himself to the next place, you know, and that is really what I hear. And the whole band on this record.
So we've sort of come to the end of the year and talking about releases. I know that for some people you say, well, it's only December and it's not even the end of December and why are you talking about the end of the year? But the truth of the matter is in the cycle of releases, pretty much what's come out is going to come out, and I feel good about sort of summing up the year now and give people a chance to check out music they haven't before the year ends. And it's these shows for me, and I listen to other and read other things at the end of the year just to see what I've missed. And it's always a chance to catch up on stuff that I knew nothing about or little about.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think all of us in this room have a big stack of 2014 records we're technically supposed to be listening to. But this really is. It's the time of, I mean, obviously it's a time of year for reflection in general. But in terms of music, yeah, it's a chance to catch up on, you know, I'm still writing down, I've taken notes during this episode on records I'm going to check out more.
And speaking of reflection, this is a year we lost a lot of musicians. Phil Ramone, great producer, George Jones, Slim Whitman.
Albert Murray, the great jazz writer, another great music writer, Chet Flippo, passed this year. Ray Manzarek of The Doors we lost. George Duke, Cedar Walton.
Oh, yeah.
Richie Havens.
Yeah, NPR Music is going to be putting out a lot here towards the end of the year, a lot of features, and one of them is our In Memoriam, where you can read all about a whole bunch of artists that we lost this year, hear their music, and learn a little bit more about them.
And two particularly I'd like to go out on, Stephen.
Yeah.
Not Stephen, but...
Thankfully, hopefully, by the time this episode airs, I will still be alive. One of my favorite singer-songwriters and somebody that people are still in the process of discovering, which, you know, as it's very bittersweet that people are discovering him now because of his death back in March, but a singer-songwriter I really deeply love named Jason Molina, who made a bunch of really remarkable, sort of barren and beautiful, very personal records, first under the name Songs Ohio and then under the name The Magnolia Electric Company. And there was actually just a reissue of the last Songs Ohio record, which is called The Magnolia Electric Company, and kind of, you know, at this obviously very transitional point in his career, where he went from singing these bruised confessionals about just survival to singing bruised rock and roll songs about survival with a full band, very Neil Young-esque and beautiful. And I just think that he was a real treasure and somebody whose music I think is going to find new audiences, for many, many years into the future. And his label just did a deluxe 10-year anniversary reissue of that particular album. And I want to play what has become somewhat of a signature song for him, Hold On Magnolia.
It's very
personal stuff. It's not toy depression that he's, you know, this isn't, you know, the way music kind of takes sadness and makes it artificial. Mm-hmm. His music did not do that.
I'm glad that you brought us to a place of reflectiveness.
Yeah, I'm
and
sorry
all
to
seriousness.
Drag everybody down.
No, but in all seriousness, because you were saying about how there aren't that many releases in December, I think you know, we as humans need a time to reflect and appreciate what has happened and mourn what we've lost. And I know that, Bob, especially you and I felt a great loss, and really the whole world of popular music and rock and roll this year.
For Lou Reed, who one of our listeners wrote in when we had the memoriam and people at talking about what Lou Reed meant to them, says he had a friend write to him and say, if you hear Lou Reed as a teenager, you'll be weird forever. and I think all of us heard Lou Reed as teenagers. And I think there's a common bond about the way he spoke about life and growing. And no one wrote songs the way he wrote songs. And then there was the sheer difference in the music that he made, the sounds that he and friends, John Cale and, you know, all those Velvets.
Yeah, Robert Quine and, right. and so many people he worked with over the years. And, of course, his long relationship with Laurie Anderson was very inspiring to me as two working artists making a life together later in his life.
And a veteran artist who made great records all the way up to the end, right?
I even like that Metallica record, and I'm not kidding.
And I can remember being a kid in Queens right around the advent and beginning of FM radio, and I kid you not, because FM radio, although we think of it as forever, really, it didn't come into its own until the middle, late 60s. I remember a friend coming around and telling me, have you heard this group, The Velvet Underground? And I said, no, what a weird name. And I remember not long later, I think it was WNEW in New York, played The Velvet Underground. It was my early hearing of them. I never heard anything like them ever. And then, but a few years later, that great song on the record, Loaded, called Rock and Roll, where this girl who basically has nothing in her life, and one fine morning she turns on a New York station and her life is saved by rock and roll. And it's such a beautiful moment in a song. And I think I'd like to go out on that way to reflect on Lou Reed, though there's so much we could do.
One of the few artists, I think, who everyone in this room could actually agree on. Yeah. So maybe that's another good way to go out on in the year.
Indeed. We love you, Lou Reed. We miss you.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's that combination of his music was cool, but it was also written with this incredible sense of humanity and humility.
Rock and roll heart.
Indeed. Thanks, everybody. Stephen
Thank
Thompson,
you.
Ann Powers, and Robin Hilton.
Onward to 2014.
Bye, everybody. For NPR Music, it's All Songs Considered.
Jenny said when she was just 5 years old, there was nothing happening at all. Every time she puts on the radio, there was nothing going down at all. Not at all. You know she don't believe what she heard at all. She started shaking to that fine, fine music. You know her life was saved by rock and roll. Despite all the amputations, you know you could just go out and dance to the rock and roll station. It was all right.
It was all right.
Hey, baby, you know it was all right. Death of us all.
and it was all right. Oi, listen to me now.